Thanks for listening to Crossing Continents. I'm sure you've heard a lot about the Affordable Care Act in the US, better known as Obamacare. It might end up providing medical insurance for an extra 30 million people if it works. Well, what about a plan which would provide health insurance for an extra 240 million people? That's what they're going to try and do next year in Indonesia. Now, it's tough organising anything in a country which is spread out over thousands of islands, let alone the biggest universal healthcare system in the world. We sent our former Jakarta correspondent Claire Balderson back to her old patch to see if they really could make it work.
How many people do you see every day in this clinic?
Kalau seluruhnya,
about 100 to 200.
Do you have a doctor here every day?
Tiap hari dua orang, tiga dengan saya, GP-nya.
Three doctors here. Do you feel you have enough equipment, enough doctors here to cope with the number of people who come?
Kalau dokter, saya rasa sudah cukup. Fasilitas mungkin alat kesehatan.
So that the doctors are adequate, but equipment are not really. They don't feel they have enough equipment to support the operation.
This is a primary health clinic, a puskesmas as they're called, in Makassar, a city 2 hours flying time east of Jakarta. Makassar is the main city in Sulawesi, one of the largest of Indonesia's thousands of islands. This clinic is fairly typical of those that the vast majority of Indonesians rely on for their health care. I'm being shown the midwife's room by the director, Dr. Teri Raja.
I wonder if you could show me some of the equipment that you have and tell me what else it is that you need.
Boleh ditunjukkan pada kita apa saja alat yang...
So we're being shown a wooden stick about, I'd say 20 centimetres long. It's got a sort of circle on the top. This is a piece of equipment which they're telling us is rather old-fashioned, but I'm not even sure what it does.
You put it over the mother's stomach to try to hear the baby's heartbeat.
Yeah.
Just through that small hole through a wooden stick, basically.
Yes. How do you use it? Bagaimana bu cara memakainya itu?
Okay, we're going to have a demonstration. So now the nurse is placing one end of this wooden stick onto the tummy of the pregnant lady, and she's listening through the hole in the stick to see if she can hear the baby's heartbeat. And that's about as high-tech as it gets in this primary health clinic.
In health terms, Indonesia has a mountain to climb. But starting in January, the government's introducing a national health insurance scheme that'll eventually offer health care free at the point of use to the 240 million inhabitants of this vast archipelago. It'll amalgamate existing free services for the poor with a bewildering patchwork of local provision, creating the biggest universal healthcare system in the world. No wonder other developing countries are watching closely to see if it'll work. In this edition of Crossing Continents, I'm trying to find out how well Indonesia's prepared for this big step in the creation of a welfare state. The system will be funded in part by compulsory monthly premiums paid into a government insurance fund. But the poor, more than 85 million of them, won't pay anything at all. Health Minister Nafsya Mboy is the person in charge of implementing this transformative vision.
The contribution of poor people is being paid by the government because the whole philosophy is that whenever they get sick, they can be treated for free, so that they can go back to work, because if they cannot work, they cannot get themselves out of poverty. So a whole health insurance for the poor actually is part of the comprehensive poverty alleviation program.
All over Indonesia, you find these little kampungs, as they're called. They're almost like villages within cities and towns, where everyone knows each other. There's a community head. There are very narrow paved roads with deep gullies on each side filled with rubbish, and when it rains, rather disgusting water. Always kids running all over the place. Tiny houses, laundry hanging out, people selling food on carts that are trundled up and down these paths. This is very much how life is led, out on the street, sitting at the backs of their houses for millions and millions of people in this country.
In theory, the government's supposed to be providing free healthcare for the poor already. They get what they call a Jamkesmas card, a crucial piece of plastic they can show at clinics and hospitals. In South Sulawesi, the provincial government's gone further, offering free care to just about anyone who can prove they live in the province. But it's not entirely clear how you get the magic cards.
So we've taken shelter from the rain under a small hut with corrugated iron on the roof, and there's some men playing a game with shells or stones in the corner and the mosque behind us. And I'm with Ibu Niar, who is the Erte, which is sort of head of the local community. She knows everyone in the community. So I'm going to ask her some questions about how people get these plastic cards, these laminated cards that are so important, they'll get them healthcare.
So there would be a form the Ketua RT fill in, which is the data of everyone in the community. They then put out a questionnaire to the people where they can then fill in. And after that, they're the one who decide who's to get what.
But it doesn't always work, does it? Sometimes someone gets a card and they shouldn't have one, and sometimes someone doesn't get a card and they should have one.
Seperti itu, ada yang seharusnya layak, dapat, itu tidak dapat. Dan yang harusnya tidak mendapatkan itu malah ada namanya yang tertera di situ.
Yes, that's the mystery. The people we endorse to have the service doesn't have it. Those who didn't end up with it.
Why does that happen?
Tidak ada tanggapan juga dari kami.
It's a mystery for us. We don't know.
And Ibu Nia has now introduced me to a man who drives a becak, which is a pedicab. Not a very lucrative job. Man in a blue T-shirt with a hat on, sheltering with me from the rain. And apparently he doesn't have any kind of health insurance.
Tidak ada.
Haven't got it. Why not? Why not? You live here and you don't earn much money. Why not?
Ya, miskin. Saya tidak dapat kesan. Biar apa, saya tidak dapat.
Satu. I don't know why, but I didn't get it.
Did you ask for it?
Sudah. Berapa kali saya minta, saya tidak dapat.
Many times, but to no avail.
Using private health insurance is more reliable and more hassle-free for me.
In a busy coffee shop in the centre of Makassar, I met middle-class professionals Rini Indrayanti and Luna Vidya. Rini gets private health insurance through her employer. It's not just the quality of the public system that puts her off. Her parents are entitled to subsidised care under yet another existing health scheme, one for civil servants. But she says it's unbelievably slow and bureaucratic.
Yes, it's a hassle.
How about you, Luna? What do you do when it comes to health insurance?
I buy private insurance as well.
For you and your family?
Yes, for me and my families.
Why do you think there's this problem then, that in the public hospitals the standard, and I've seen it myself, it's low? What is the problem?
Can I tell you the story? One day I visit my friend in one public hospital, and in one room, empty room, I saw a staff make a bakar ikan, you know, it's like
grilling fish in the hospital,
empty room, they grilling fish, and I said, what? I will never come to this kind of hospital, never, I promise that.
Terrible quality, stifling bureaucracy. No wonder most wealthier Indonesians go abroad for their medical care. And that's despite the fact that health services have arguably been brought closer to the people in recent years through the decentralisation of power from the capital, Jakarta.
After 1998, there was a decentralisation programme that is one of the most ambitious in the world.
Political science professor Michael Bueller is a long-time observer of Indonesian politics.
And what happened is, in Indonesia, that they actually decentralised most of the power to the district levels, basically.
What has that meant for the provision of healthcare, do you think?
So for the provision of healthcare, we now see that it is up to the district level to manage a lot of these healthcare programs. It's up to the district to also come up with ideas for how to find people that qualify, but then also to register people for these healthcare systems. So the money may come from the national level, but it's actually at the district level where it's really managed and executed.
Well, does that mean then that what is provided differs from district to district?
Right, so there's quite a variance now that we see across Indonesia. We have a very famous system in Yogyakarta that has basically been the leader in many ways. And then there's certain districts where there's no local healthcare system at all.
I'm driving south out of the city of Makassar towards the small town of Jeneponto, which is a couple of hours away. It's incredibly beautiful on this road. There are rice fields stretching far into the distance, a luminous bright, bright green. And then beyond them, there's a range of mountains. Nearer, along the side of the road, are banana and mango trees and lots of other vegetation, some palm trees heavy with coconuts on them. It is wonderfully lush around here. In between, there are houses that are on tall stilts, some of them very brightly coloured, some with quite elaborate carvings on the wooden balconies and the stairways. They seem to have one big room on top, and then the space underneath is for storage and for animals, children playing, and adults sheltering from the sun.
Saya Iksan Iskandar, pada kesempatan ini mendapat kepercayaan di wawancara untuk mengetahui sejauh mana program-program kesehatan yang akan dilaksanakan di Kabupaten Jeneponto.
The applause is for Iksan Iskandar, candidate for Bupati or district head in Jeneponto, and specifically for what he plans to do with healthcare in his district if he's elected. The new national scheme will be administered from Jakarta, but thanks to decentralisation, the actual services will still be delivered by local leaders like Mr. Iksandar. He'll get to spend the health funds.
Kalau saya kampanye dan bahkan masih dalam proses sosialisasi sampai saat ini.
My main campaign on the theme of health is to add more doctors and medical staffs because, as you know, in Jeneponto, there are still a big need, and especially for those who specialize in certain illness or diseases. So that's what we promised people.
But can you deliver that yourself?
Inshallah.
Well, you know, inshallah, God willing.
And Mr. Iksandar promises to go further. He says he'll build a big centre housing the police, fire service and medical staff, able to respond to any emergency in the district within 10 minutes. But a visit to the primary health clinic, or Puskesmas, in rural Jeneponto really makes me wonder about such grandiose plans.
What happened to his knee?
Abscess. Dia luka bernana.
He got abscess from swimming.
From swimming? An abscess on his knee. Are you a doctor?
Perawat.
Nurse.
You're a nurse.
Yes, nurse.
Are there any doctors in the Puskesmas?
Lagi tidak masuk.
He's off today.
So you don't have a doctor here every day?
Makassar.
He's off to Makassar today. Sorry, it's a she.
It's a she, a woman doctor. And this is the inpatients ward with 2, 4, 6, 7, 9 beds in it, several of them occupied by children, others by old people, just sitting, one or two lying on the beds. No sheets on the beds, they bring their own batik and other cloths to put on the beds. They bring their own food, or the families bring the food and are sitting with them. Everyone just sitting, waiting, some of the babies on drips because they've got diarrhea, very, very common illness in a lot of these villages, small children with diarrhea. Apart from the drips, there's absolutely no sign of any equipment, and it's filthy, actually. The floor is really dirty. It doesn't feel good as a hospital at all, but it's what they've got and what a lot of these people are grateful for because it's better than nothing. What's wrong with them?
Diarrhea, the usual case. But no money paid, thanks to the Jamkasmas scheme. It's been here for 2 days. Not ideal, obviously, and they see it as a lifesaver.
It is a lifesaver for tens of millions of Indonesians, but only when it comes to easy-to-treat illnesses like diarrhea or light injuries. A clinic like this can just about cope with those. But it's pretty obvious that without a full-time doctor or apparently any diagnostic tools, the clinic is woefully ill-equipped.
Someone hit her.
on the head. She's showing us her head.
The middle-aged woman, in some pain and distress, is being told she really needs a scan. But she'd have to go all the way to Makassar, more than 2 hours' drive, for that. Instead, somewhat bizarrely, the nurse prescribes antibiotics, even though there's no sign of a wound, let alone an infection. I'm not sure what the doctor would have done if she'd been here. Indonesia has a lower ratio of doctors to population than most countries in Southeast Asia, and there's a real problem getting them to work in poor rural areas where there aren't many opportunities for lucrative private work on the side. It's clearly very frustrating for the head of the Jenoponto Clinic, Pak Suhapid.
He said that no budget for another additional doctor. But they have only one doctor, so only that. But not only, not every day.
Mestinya seperti itu, Mbak. Saya juga sudah sering kali menyampaikan. Saya bilang, saya harus berubah. Kita ini sudah dewasa semua.
So, for the rules, it's supposed to stand by a daily basis. But according to him, it's depend on the doctor itself. He have no power to push the doctor to stand by every day.
So the doctor is supposed to be here, yes. But could actually do what they want.
Padahal saya ada masukan sedikit, Mbak, ya. Padahal suatu pemerintah itu sudah menyiapkan.
He said that actually the government already provide the housing for the doctor.
Saya bisa sampaikan, Mbak. Ada rangkuman saya tempel di bawah.
According to him that he tried to do the best, but he said that I have no power to for the staff, for the medical, for the doctor. What I have to do, the government already provide the house, but they don't want to stay there. He already gave 3 times warning about that.
It must be very difficult. I don't envy you. Your job is hard. How many people altogether do you think that you're responsible for here?
Ada sampai 56,000 itu.
So you're responsible for 56,000 people with this very basic health clinic here.
I've been thinking about what's going to happen when the entire population is supposed to use these services under the nationwide scheme. And it just happens that I've come across a story in the local press here in Makassar that does make me wonder how the system's going to cope. The headline on the front page of Metropolis newspaper says that a baby boy died after being turned away by 4 hospitals. It says 15-month-old baby Revan died of diarrhea and dehydration, and that one of the hospitals that couldn't help him was the biggest public facility in eastern Indonesia. So I'm going to try to find out what happened.
And this is the small house of the couple who lost their baby. They're sitting on a carpet on the floor, the stone floor of the one main room. There are some other rooms behind, and Granny is sitting in the doorway. Husband and wife sitting on the floor with, I think, his sister as well. And I'm going to go and talk to them and find out what happened to their son, who was 1 year, 3 months old and just died a couple of days ago.
Ibu Nimawanti describes how her child wouldn't stop vomiting. He was unconscious when she took him to the first hospital. They didn't do more than put him on a drip and send him on to the bigger provincial public hospital. But she couldn't get a bed for the boy there either.
There is a medical staff. The medical staff asked to the doctor, doctor, what I have to do with the patient? And the doctor said that, wait, don't do anything before I give instruction.
Hampir sejam.
Almost 1 hour, no treatment, no action.
Kena dehidrasi berat. Begini, Ibu, kalau Ibu mau dikasih.
Eventually, the doctor said he couldn't do much more than the first hospital had because, he explained, there was no room in the specialist ward. Ibu Nimawanti says she was so desperate at this point, she fell back on a tried and tested strategy in Indonesia. She offered the doctors money.
She asked the doctor, doctor, how long I have to wait until they receive my baby? Or how much money that I have to pay to you? How much money that I have, you need me to pay, so you take action for my baby.
What did he say to that?
Dia datang menghampiri saya. Dia bilang, Ibu, minta maaf, Ibu. bukan masalah.
She said that the doctor apologized to her and sorry. It's not because of the money. It's not because we don't want to give you treatment. It's because all the equipment is used by the other patient. And then she started crying. So what I have to do with that? So.
Yeah, and she's crying now. I'm sorry. It's very upsetting for you to tell the story.
The director of the hospital told me his staff tried their best to treat the baby, but acknowledged there was no bed for him and no specialist equipment available. When that happens, they send the patient on to a private hospital. In this case, the first one they called didn't even pick up the phone. Eventually, Revan was admitted by another private hospital, but he died 2 days later. It's an individual tragedy, but sadly not that uncommon, which raises awkward questions. If it's already struggling now, will Indonesia be capable of delivering a public health system for everyone? Academic Michael Bueller has his doubts.
I'm not sure if the government has actually thought through the entire process. So they're creating these demands, but then basically now have an increase in demand compared to a couple of years ago. I think it's almost a 50% increase in terms of the number of patients that actually go and demand certain services from hospitals, and the hospitals just don't seem to be ready or equipped also for demands that they now see from people.
And there'll be more demands again when they bring in the system for the whole country, do you think?
Right, I think that's just going to increase it, especially because it's a universal system, right? So right now you probably just may have the people that for some reason made it on these lists that are going to demand these services. But if you have a universal healthcare system, of course, that's going to create increased demand.
Experience to date suggests Michael Bueller's right to be concerned. A year ago, the city authorities in Jakarta created a version of what's now being planned for the entire country. Free healthcare for all the capital's residents. Primary health clinics were supposed to act as gatekeepers, but patients, knowing how under-resourced they often are, went straight to hospitals, which were then swamped. That included private hospitals. The government buys services from the private sector. It has to, because it hasn't got enough of its own. But the chaos that enveloped free care in Jakarta led some local hospitals to say they wanted nothing more to do with the public scheme.
I've got into one of the three-wheeler taxis. I say taxi, it's actually sort of a motorbike with a little tin hut on top that's taking me through the back streets of Jakarta on the way to Tamarin Hospital. Now, Tamarin is a private hospital. It used to take patients under the public insurance scheme, but it stopped doing so because it was overwhelmed, as I understand it. And I'll go there and find out a bit more about what happened when the Jakarta-wide health scheme came in.
I'm Abdul Bari. I'm the vice president of the MH Tamarin Hospital in Salemba in West Java.
So what happened when the new governor introduced his health for everybody, really, in Jakarta, wasn't it? Anyone who didn't have insurance, he said, could go and get treated if they were a resident of Jakarta. What happened here at this hospital?
Well, of course, initially there were a very high increase of people who wanted to be treated in our hospital. But after probably 1 month, we were already be able to adapt to face that increase. But we think that's not the big issue. The big issue is the payment, the amount of payment, especially for the intensive care treatments for our patients. When you have to treat a patient in the intensive care, the payment is very, very low.
Because basically, if a patient came here and was in intensive care, you would lose money. The hospital would end up subsidizing it.
Right, exactly. We, as private hospital, we are not trying to make big profits now, but the cost has to be recovered because the difference from our actual cost and the tariff that they pay, the payment is only 10% from what we charge. So from the very beginning, we tell the governor that we could not afford to run the program.
But the central government can't run a health service for the entire country without the private sector. It's not just capacity. As we've heard, plenty of Indonesians won't go near the public system because of the quality. I'd expect that Jakarta's experience must worry the government then. Well, not really. Health Minister Nafsia Mboy told me there'd certainly been problems, but lessons had been learned.
Jakarta went too fast. The preparations were not yet in place. And also, there is this notion that everybody can go to the hospital, but just for the birds. The same happened in some districts where the Bupati used it as a political tool, actually. If you elect me, I will provide free treatment. And that's not what we say.
Okay. But you've got a big education project then, haven't you? Because people are going to say, I'm ill, I need care, I'm going to the hospital.
Exactly, you're right. And that comes under the preparation. So we prepare the system, but also communication, information, education, which is now going on using all kinds of media, including social media, because it's something new. They don't know that people should not go straight to the big hospital.
You also have to prepare more medical staff, because at the moment Indonesia has fewer doctors per head of population than countries of equivalent GDP. And in fact, it's quite low in the world generally, isn't it? So you've got a big task there.
I don't know where you got that information, but let me give you some figures. For instance, we have 72 medical faculties and 7,000 new doctors every year. But again here, it's the maldistribution and quality. So that's what we are working on with special programs, etc., to ensure that there are doctors in isolated areas, in those island areas. And inshallah, by 2014, we will be there.
2014 isn't far off. The government says it'll take 5 years to roll out the full programme, training more medical staff and getting them out to far-flung islands. Also setting up the insurance fund and making sure all but the poorest pay into it. But will those who can afford to go elsewhere actually use the public system? It's something I asked Rini and Luna when I met them at that coffee shop in Makassar.
I think I'll continue with private.
Because the bureaucracy?
Yes, because of the bureaucracy. I think it will be more bureaucratic than whatever they have right now. Yes.
How about you, Luna?
I don't know now, but I think I'll go with the government. Do you know why? Because I know some government that really want to change the systems. They have dreams about better Indonesia, better people, better public service. If I'm not support these dreams, who's going to support it? So maybe I'll go with that.
But at the moment, you think that good basic standard isn't even there?
Even not there. The standard is not there.
Luna's sentiments are understandable. You can't help but sympathise with the government's good intentions. But as I've seen, the challenges are enormous. Can Indonesia reform an incomprehensible bureaucracy? Will it be able to force a reluctant doctor to live amongst her patients in rural Sulawesi? And how will it make sure no more mothers, like Nimawanti in Makassar, lose their children for want of a hospital bed?
Crossing Continents was presented by Claire Balderson and produced by Mike Gallagher. Next week, we're off to Bangladesh, where they're putting people on trial for war crimes. But how come most of them happen to be leaders of an opposition party?